title for this evening is Living in an Apartheid State, Differing Perspectives. A forum is a time where we try purposely to pick controversial issues in order to sense a spectrum, and we encourage each individual to express their viewpoints clearly as possible, as briefly as possible, and if it's a question, to keep it to a question. And also that we are a Christian community, and with the Christian community, we ask that you phrase and ask your questions in a way that will be received in love and in concern, because these issues are all issues we've been dealing with this week and probably the next 2 weeks are emotional issues. I would like to ask our three panelists today to briefly introduce themselves to you and tell them a little bit about their background, how old they are, where they're from, what they're studying, and that sort of thing before we actually get formally started.
My name is Mavugu Tshembe. I come from South Africa, where I was born, and now I go to North Dakota State University in Fargo, studying chemical engineering, having finished my first year, and having 3 years to go.
My name is Emmy Finico. I'm a Rotary exchange student in Seattle, from South Africa. I've lived in South Africa all my life, and so have my parents, and I'm staying in North Seattle for a year, 12 months.
I'm Kathy Wee, and I grew up in Yaw, Minnesota, and then last year I was at school at St. Olaf, perhaps you've heard of it, and the year before that I was in South Africa as an exchange student, and I lived in Johannesburg and traveled around a lot.
Can all of you hear? So the volume of our
not very well.
So maybe we can remember to try to speak up. I've asked all three to start us off this evening with an opening remark dealing with basically two issues. One, what is it like to live in an apartheid state? And two, where do they see hope in that state? And so let's start over here and then just keep the same order, and then we open it up for questions.
Good evening. I have had to rewrite my speech, which I had written last night, for a few important reasons. First of all, I wish to remind you all that we are gathered here tonight as Christians to discuss the issues on which many millions of people's lives are dependent. We are therefore to talk respectfully to one another and without rebuke. In other words, we are not here to yell at each other. We are here to seek and find ways in which we can peacefully solve the problems of my country, South Africa. We do this for the simple reason that we seek to avoid solving our problems through an armed confrontation. I therefore appeal to my fellow South African, Amy, to try and be frank, realistic, and truthful. You will also realize that Annie is young and may thus tend to say things on whim. For the latter reason, I shall appeal to her to clarify between things she believes in and things she has heard other people say. Finally, I appeal to Annie as a Christian and pastor to leave the whole issue behind in America, for I need more time. Now, addressing the issue of how I feel living under apartheid, I shall say but a few. Apartheid destroys one's morale, and for this reason, I feel drained. Indeed, weary. I feel cheated. I feel humiliated. I feel nauseated that some people even begin to defend apartheid. I feel like going back home to unshackle the heavy chains of wickedness that both my oppressor and my people suffer under. I shall draw your attention to a few statements that Kathy made yesterday and Annie earlier today, and I reconstruct. Kathy says, "We are not allowed to go to Soweto." But she didn't give a reason for that. Soweto is a black township outside Johannesburg. Two, Kathy said she visited a witch doctor's supplies store, and she didn't wish to know more about that. I wonder why. Three, Kathy also mentioned that there were clean shower rooms for gold mining workers in some of the mines in Johannesburg. She didn't give a reason for those clean showers. Now coming to Annie. Annie mentioned earlier today that they are migrant mine workers for the reason that they need to return to the homelands at intervals of 6 months because they do not get enough oxygen working underground. Two, Annie said, we have similar school syllabuses and two exams a year. But I don't know of that. I don't know that we have a similar syllabus, and that's why I said earlier tonight that she was representing white South Africa, not South Africa as a whole. Three, reason for lower black education. Annie said the government of South Africa decided to give black people education at a lower standard because African kids were not used to education as the West knew it. And for that reason, they wanted African kids to cope slowly. And she mentioned Bophuthatswana, Tswana, which is a homeland state which has taken the Pretoria independence. And she mentioned gambling, a thrilling issue, of course. But she didn't mention that a lot of South African young people, white and black and blue, go to Bophuthatswana to gamble, to have fun. Annie mentioned that they have 50% of the land is allocated to the homelands. But I don't know that. I know that there's 13% allocated to the black people. 13%. She also said that people feel strongly about their own homeland structure. If you remember, the other day I said these opinions are based on asking people that are illiterate or functionally illiterate. And then people say, well, we like to live in our homelands. And they take that and make it statistic. And Annie mentioned the minimum wage of 250 rand for the servants, that is house workers. But I know a lot of people who work in firms that don't make 250 rand a month. How could a house worker make more? She mentioned ANC as being banned for terror, but she didn't mention why ANC decided to become terroristic. And she also didn't mention that ANC was banned because before it took up to arms, it was banned when they were marching and talking openly. Annie also mentioned that there are no shanties in Soweto today. I don't know, but I do know that I have seen shanties still. And then the influx control, we didn't have much time for that. Influx control has to do with the pass laws. And apparently Annie has a reason to defend that. And
well, if you want to, but if you want to make what your original statement was, you can make your original statement, and then if you have some questions back and forth, or if they want you to respond, they can ask you to respond to any of those.
Okay. Well, as I previously mentioned, my name is Emmy. What I'd like to say as a Christian person living in South Africa, there are things in South Africa that I cannot and will never try and defend, and I will never try and tell you that some things that we do is right. There are things that discrimination on color is something that is not, cannot ever be justified anywhere in the world, and that is not something I will ever try and do, and I will not try and do it tonight. What my point of view on South Africa is, and what I would like to do to, or would like to convince you of, is that we have inherited, as a young South African, I've inherited a number of problems connecting South Africa. I did not make the apartheid law. I had no say in what Dr. Hendrik Verwoerd decided his policy to be. But I'm growing up in a country where apartheid has been the law and was the policy for such a long time. The important thing that I think all of us has to remember is that, and I said this earlier this afternoon, that more changes has been made these past 3 years in South Africa than has been done in the 300 years before that, which means more things have been done in South Africa to revert racism and apartheid, to try and abolish apartheid in the country, than has ever done before. And obviously we have not solved all our problems, and there are still a number of laws that are still hurt people and that are not, that we don't need in South Africa, that still is there. But I think what we have to do is look at the positive side sometimes and see what has been done. And I'm somebody who wants to work for within South Africa and would like to see South Africa change. And that's basically what I'd like to say.
I just wrote down, it's sort of a long white line, some of the things that when I think about South Africa, what I think about, it's a beautiful country. It's very divided and a torn country, I think. It's a wealthy country. It's home for me. It's very complex. I see it as having many problems, some unique problems, and some problems that are not unique, that you would find all over the world. I find it as a country in which its history has played a very important and large role. I find it as a country that is often misunderstood, and I find it as a country where there's a lot of prejudice against it. A lot of people are very prejudiced against the white, as seeing them all bad, and against the black, as seeing them all good. I know it's easy to generalize. We do it a lot here. I do it a lot. But it's sometimes very hurtful. I see it as a country that's changing. I see it as a very religious country with a lot of varying beliefs, with Dutch Reform, Zionists, Anglican, Lutherans. And I guess I'd like to see it as a hopeful country, too. Sometimes it's easy not to be hopeful and to be overwhelmed by some of the problems and, you know, ways to find solutions. But I think there is hope there, and there are a lot of people who are in love with the country and who are committed to the country and in finding solution. And I think that's where the hope is.
Okay, we have about 45 minutes, and we will call it an end at no later than 10 o'clock, no matter where we are in our discussion, because we will be somewhere where we need to go further, and we suggest that you do that back in your lodges or your chalets or in the jacuzzi or over coffee someplace else and through the coming days. Ask you if you want to address a question specifically to somebody, you address it specifically. If you want to address it just generally to see whoever picks it up, you just say to anybody who wants to answer this question. Or if you want to make some sort of comment, make the comment, but try to keep it brief so we can maximize the amount of comments that we can that we can have. So, open right here.
It seems to me that eventually, for peace to occur in South Africa, there will need to be majority rule. I'm interested in whether you all see that happening, and if you see that happening in any way peaceful.
Should I answer the question? Something that is spoken out about is the question, is will one man, one vote work in South Africa? Now, there is people vary a lot on that, and at the moment the proposed government, the proposed new constitutional, basically the new constitution for South Africa, is one that is based not on a majority rule. It is one that is based on a country, a form of government where all minorities are given some kind of a form of speech. And the reason for this decision is that in research done in over a number of years, the South African government have decided that majority rule, or a one man, one vote, cannot work in Africa. They said that there have been 55 coup d'etats in Africa, throughout Africa, as the result of that, as a result of trying to have a majority rule, and that is the reason why. So at this stage, it is not the proposed plan. The proposed plan for South Africa is basically a government of minorities, which South Africa is.
I do see majority rule working in Africa, in South Africa, as it works in America. That is, as long as there are no people trying to break that down, to destabilize that. Right now, South Africa is busy disturbing the neighboring states, trying to destabilize them through all sorts of infiltration, so that it can prove that Africans cannot govern themselves. Well, in South Africa, the fear, I believe, that makes the South African politicians believe one man, one vote, want to work, is that they feel that they won't stand a chance in elections, because we are the majority. But now, what they don't consider is that they didn't give a chance to everyone to develop together, so that we can look at each other as persons and not as black and white. So over time, I believe that even if at the beginning we voted and had an all-black parliament, gradually we would end up having whites in our parliament, because we'd have enough judgment to elect leaders on the basis of leadership, not of color.
I think a majority rule would work there, although I think because you speak of all the differences that exist, all the hatred that and bitterness that is there, and the separateness that has been there for so long, that I think it would not. If it happened overnight, I think it would be a disaster. I think it would, over time though, and I think it is something that should be a goal, because I think that is something, but I think it needs to be a gradual thing. And because, as you mentioned, they haven't developed at the same rate, I think that's another reason for it to be a more gradual process.
Yes, and even now, the South African government is going on trying to separate the people. The black people, for one thing, I'm a Zulu, and they are Xhosa people, they are Venda. And our government says, you should live in your homelands, preserve your culture. They don't say, come together as people, as black people. So the separation that was there is not a mistake, it's intentional, because even today, it's still being instigated. People are still being removed from where they live by force.
Did you have a question?
Yeah, I wanted to ask Amy if she recognizes...
The Lord.
I wanted to ask Amy if she recognizes the person next to her as being a South African, or do you see him as being a tribal member with his own homeland?
No.
And do you see the homelands ever being eliminated and the possibility of coming together? I think once the homelands exist, you're separating. There's no chance.
I think what is really important to know is that the thing I want more than anything else for South Africa is a peaceful solution. And Ubuntu is, in my, is a South African. Just as I want everybody, I mean, I don't think see myself as the only white people being South Africans, the others not being South Africans. I think we all feel very strongly about South Africa. But, and to the question of the homelands, and the whole issue of aren't we breaking up our country instead of unifying our country, something that you have to take into account is that most of the African leaders, and that is the African leaders, the tribal leaders, ask for separation. They wanted to retain their identity. And I'm not saying that on a whim, but I'm saying that because of fact. I've heard a number of leaders. I've heard the leader of Bophuthatswana address. I've heard a number of, you know, African leaders, and most of them, most of the leaders in South Africa, the African leaders in South Africa, are crying out to retain their identity, just as little as a German would not want to give up his identity to become a European. Why is Europe divided up into different countries? Why can't we have a European nation? I think in the same way, you have to take into account that the different tribes in South Africa are very different.
I believe you have made the point. Talking about chiefs, I did mention earlier, it was on Wednesday, I believe, that the southern government prides on these greedy chiefs of ours, with which we don't agree. They take advantage of them because they promise them power. But now, there are chiefs that, when they start speaking against the government, against the injustice of the government, they get deposed, and a new chief elected. So our chiefs are no longer the chiefs we knew, but they're just agents of apartheid.
But who gets to choose your chiefs? Is it the tribes themselves in South Africa choose the chiefs? And what chief has been deported because he doesn't agree with the government of South Africa? I can't think of one example.
Up here.
I have a question to this optimistic, you know, progress which South African government is doing, and I feel very strongly opposite to it, because as a matter of fact, pushing the people, black population to the homelands, is nothing else but reminds me of the situation of the Jews to end up once and for all the problem of Jews. It is not done in a such drastic way. Nonetheless, I've seen and repeat again several movies done by BBC, and only 50% of them were able to come out of the country because the rest of them has been censored, simply taken away by South African government. And I think that, I'm not an expert, but it appears to me from this movie, the tribal structure is indeed totally destroyed. If the people are being pulled out from their own previous settlement at random and sent at random to any other homeland, separating not only the tribal ties, but also family, immediate family relationships, and leaving them outside the homeland empty, not in the fertile land, but in the stony land, with whatever they have on their garbs, without anything to do, anything, any tools to indeed toil this land. And on top of it, none of them are anymore the members of the society to whom they participate and build up the economy. They, in order to leave the South African country, they have to sneak out of the country. They cannot have a passport. They are people of nobody.
That takes us to the next issue, the issue of
I would like to ask any another question. Talking about the religious country, I don't know if you are aware of the fact that the Lutheran Church at the present time is debating to break the ties and not consider anymore the churches in South Africa as the churches, because the basic principle, the consideration and acceptance of the other person is the basis of a celebration of the, any worship celebration or Lord's Supper. I don't know how the people can celebrate Lord's Supper, the sacrament of unity, knowing at the same time that the highest ratio of infant mortality is in South Africa in homeless.
I have a news release on that. I thought that might come up. Because the Lutheran World Federation was debating the issue whether or not to expel the two white Lutheran church bodies, but maybe a little bit because of that pressure or not, I don't know how it happened, but a declaration signed by all of the bishops April 19th state a declaration of an intent to unite, forming a 12-member unity commission of six from the Evangelical Lutheran Church in Southern Africa, the Black Church, and three from each of the white church bodies. And we'll see what happens. But they have stated an intent to unite, and that just happened here in April.
Yeah, well, can I say something? A church group that I think in Mobutu's speech that got a lot of criticism was the Dutch Reformed Church. Now, I'm a member of the Dutch Reformed Church in South Africa, and for a long time, the Dutch Reformed Church was maybe one of the staunch supporters of apartheid in the country. I can tell you today that the Dutch Reformed Church in South Africa has become an integrated church. We have, on a number of occasions, in my church, in my congregation in South Africa, had a completely integrated sermon, has had sermons by black ministers, has celebrated the Lord's Supper together. And I think that we have to take into account that time has passed and changes are happening. And it's fine to say that when you were in the country, and the changes are happening so fast that a year ago, it still did not happen. And then a declaration was signed by over 500 ministers of the Dutch Reformed Church. And these are all white ministers. And this was handed in at the Synod, the Dutch Reformed Synod, pleading for unification of the Dutch Reformed Church in South Africa. And a combined synod was then held, which means the combined synod was the Church of Africa, which is the in the past was basically the black branch of the Dutch Reformed Church and the Dutch Reformed Church of South Africa. And they held a combined synod just last year, and a lot of very positive rapport came from that synod.
And when this was done, this integration?
It was they had the last synod meeting last year in June.
June last year.
Yeah.
But I was in South Africa at that time, and I didn't get to go to a white Dutch Reformed Church.
There is nothing that bars you. There is nothing that bars any black person of going to a Dutch Reformed Church. I know that because there have been, on a number of occasions, have been black people in our church.
Okay. What do you say to the issue of separating families? You mentioned earlier migrant workers from the homelands going to work in Johannesburg. Now, how do you compare that to your statement that black people feel strongly about leaving their homelands under their chiefs? How do you compare this now that the men have leave that homeland and go to work, and they are not allowed to leave with their wives and their families? How do you...
If you can answer that, and then we'll go to another question down here.
Sir, I wasn't really answered by Annie yet before about my issue. She responded to the religious issue, and I asked her about the passport issue and the so-called optimistic view of the South African government.
Yeah. But part of it was that homeland question that he just readdressed, if I understood your comment right. Let's hear the answer, and we'll try to get back to it. Because I think it's related.
Well, on the fact of disrupting a family and a father working in a city and his family out on the farm, I
had exactly the same question this afternoon when I had my slide presentation. And I think I will use the same because it is personal experience that I'm talking from, and I think that is the best. And the black servant working for us, Willem, is has a wife and three daughters, little young girls, all under the age of 5. And they live in, well, they basically live in Venda, which is where he comes from and where his family lives, which means that they live a good hour and a half away from where he's working in Johannesburg. Now, for me, I could never understand, and I cannot see that it is right that you split a family up like that, that Willem has to work in a city and his family has to stay out on the farm. And when asked about that, I know at one stage he was thinking of going back and to his family, and but then when he considered it, the option is he could have brought his family to Johannesburg, but he did not want to do that because he said he did not want to raise his children in he didn't want to raise his children in a big city, that the education that they get out in the farm where his family and his grandparents and aunts and uncles live are much better than any that they would ever get in a big city like Johannesburg. So that is the reason for not bringing his family to the city. And then on the issue of, well, why don't you then rather go back to them? Why are you working in a big city? His answer was that the pay that he gets in Johannesburg is much better than any that he would get as an unskilled labor.
Do you realize that he is afraid to tell you the truth, that he may lose his job?
He is no... Willem, I have discussed many issues with Willem, and I don't know if he wants to comment on that, but I've spoken to him about a lot of even tribal issues that he has in his homeland with, and he will not... He will tell me exactly what he thinks. I don't think there is any reason that... If he wants to tell me what he really thinks, he would tell me that.
How about the people that live and that were born in Soweto, which is outside Johannesburg, and they get married there, and when the husband dies, they get expelled to go to the homelands where they know nobody. How do you feel about that issue?
The whole situation of an urban black, the urban black man in South Africa is an issue that I don't think I will explain to you because I don't have an answer to it.
In other words,
I think the urban black man is the biggest problem South Africa faces at the moment, and it is a problem because there is no answer for it. I can't see an answer, and I cannot explain to you what the situation of an urban black man because I do not understand it myself.
Do you have a solution?
I'll make two remarks. First of all, what you are saying right now is that not all the black people want to live in the homelands.
No, there is...
As you said earlier, black people like to live in their homelands under their chiefs.
No, I did not say...
What about these that are forced to go back to the homelands when they don't want to go back?
No, there is a group of people in South Africa that are referred to as the urban black, which are black people who have completely lost all ties with any kind of tribal, who do not associate themselves with any specific group in South Africa, which do not identify themselves as a Zulu or a Xhosa or a Venda.
No.
And these are the people that are in South Africa. These are the people that have no... As of the presence in South Africa, they have not basically... there has not been found a solution for them, and that is something that a lot of time has...
Do you realize that the solution lies in the government talking to the people, but the government has refused to talk to the people? So I don't see a reason for you to say you don't have a solution. It's simple. You don't have a solution because you don't want to consult with us. You want to think what is right for us.
What's your solution?
My solution is talk to us. Let's discuss issues. Don't imprison our leaders. Talk to them. That's the solution.
What leaders have been imprisoned?
Nelson Mandela is rotting in prison now.
Mandela was the leader of an ANC group, which is a terrorist group in South Africa, and they have been... They have been the cause of a number of bomb attacks on innocent people in the country, and I don't think that you need to legalize a group like the ANC that do that kind of a terrorist attack on what they call self-core targets.
Do you know
if we can shift gears a bit, if the people want to get back to this, let's get back to this. But let's broaden it maybe a little bit. Dan, you had a comment.
I'm I'm sitting here thinking, well, it's easy for us to point a finger at the white people in South Africa when I realize that is the basic thing racism, that white people in this world have tended to think of black people as less than human beings. And how this came through in colonialism, this came through in slavery in America, the lack of black people having the vote here in America, and I'm very uncomfortable with the phrase, we have to take more time, Patsy, because I heard that so many times during the Martin Luther King days, that was said over and over, we can't go too fast. And the feeling of that was, well, that's an excuse. Could it never be done?
Mm-hmm.
But the deepest concern I have is not South Africa, a place where the sin, and I call it the most brutal sin, and that is where one group of human beings will decide another group of human beings is less. Is not South Africa a place where this sin has been institutionalized? Meaning there are many good white people in South Africa, mm-hmm. of course, but it's an institution where sin has been organized. And that's why, in your response, you said that South Africa has made many mistakes, but the question is the very basis of the system a mistake? And I have my feeling for both of you, you know, I see the future of South Africa as with hope and yet the possibility of brutal violence in the future, because as long as this injustice is continued, the possibility of terrible bloodshed in your lifetimes. And,
that's
our
what
feelings, I think, are for both of you as you go back to your own people. But I guess that would be my major question is my sinfulness that I have racism inside of me as a white person. Is this a place on earth where it has been so neatly institutionalized? And therefore, is the final answer really a conversion of a nation to a whole new mentality?
I think I feel like the reason I said they need to take more time is because I sense that, you know, yet it has to be changed, yet it has to be changed. You have the two extremes, and neither can be pleased, you know, with a solution, really. And for some it won't happen fast enough, and for some it will happen way too slow. And the question now, I think, is will it happen quick enough for some people? And I feel like, in a sense, they're walking a tightrope, you know, and whether or not they'll make it to the end in time. It's a hard thing, you know, how fast do you do it? You have to keep your balance.
It will happen before there is this
bloodshed. Right, that's the fear.
Here and then here to respond, and then we'll have another comment over here.
Something I say about the fact that sin has been institutionalized in South Africa, I do agree with that. I think the worst thing in South Africa is that we have made laws from racism. We have based our laws completely on racism. The whole idea of apartheid was that you were going to do just that, that you were going to say that one group of people had the right to make decisions about others. And that is something I can, you know, I know is wrong, and I think nobody on earth would say, or very few people on earth, obviously Dr. Hendrik Verwoerd must have thought it was right when he institutionalized that, but I don't think any Christian who honestly is a Christian can say that is right. But what I'm trying to say is that they're trying to change, and as Kathy says, you know, the big thing is that if you try and change, you want to do it at such a rate that you still want to keep the biggest portion of your country happy, or at least contend with solution without getting your extreme right into power. And you don't. And what people don't always remember is that we do have a very conservative element in South Africa, and as more and more changes are happening, the conservative element are getting more and more strength.
and they are gaining more and more votes. Now, obviously, I can never agree with, you know, that conservative element and the things that they strive for. But I think what the party in power in South Africa is trying to do is to change fast enough to, as you say, not get to that point where you have a war, but to change slow enough to bring some of those conservative element along, that you don't get the conservative element in South Africa in power.
Do you think that's possible?
I think that is possible because the National Party, which is the party in power, was split last year because of a decision that the Prime Minister made because of the new constitution. And the conservative element of the party in power decided that we don't want this kind of change in South Africa. It's too fast. You're running too fast. We don't like it. And started their own party called the Conservative Party. But at the same time that the Prime Minister did that, he got a lot of the left-wing support. And I think what is happening is that the emphasis for the party in power is moving from a more conservative party that did not do lots for many years to a more, maybe a more liberal party that is trying to change. But that is my point of view. But I definitely agree with you that the biggest problem in South Africa is that we've institutionalized, we've made laws that make discrimination on color, and that is very wrong.
First of all, I shall call to your attention that the ANC, which Amy says is an outlaw terrorist group, originally started not as a terrorist group, but as a consultation group. They talked, they marched in protest. And in the 60s, they organized a march against the pass laws, and they were broken down, leaders imprisoned like Nelson Mandela, and now these guys didn't have anywhere to go and therefore resorted to violence, which in fact means they were forced to taking to violence. Now, the fact that you feel you don't have leaders to talk to and that you claim the government of South Africa is trying to change things, as recently as the last 4 years, two people have died in prison since 1977, that is. Steve Biko was a leader of the students. He died in prison. Dr. Neil Leggett, a white South African, died in prison. And the government said these people committed suicide, but they were killed. So now, when you say you don't know how to solve the problem, and yet when we have our leaders, you don't talk to them. We have Dr. Bishop Desmond Tutu. The government won't listen to him. He's a churchman. They won't talk with him. And then you have these homelands. You mentioned Lucas Mangope, Gajabu Tilis. Those are puppets of a party. They get their check from Pretoria. They earn their money, and they work for it. So those don't represent us. They just government puppets.
Over here, statement.
You talked about the element of time and how it can't happen fast enough or without happening too fast to cause violence. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, it scares me, but I'm wondering going slowly is almost, and trying to do it peacefully is almost going to end up in a violent way. You just in your last comment mentioned feeling forced, that they had no place to go, nobody to talk to, and they were forced into violent actions. And that's a very scary thing for me as a Christian, that somebody is absolutely out of options and is forced into violence. An allusion was made to the civil rights movement in this country. Perhaps a better illusion than we realize, but both the two major leaders, Martin Luther King and Malcolm X, were killed for their leadership. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the solution is, but is violence inevitable? Or some amount?
Well, something I'd like to respond to is, maybe it's not directly to your question, but the idea of not speaking to leaders is, you know, it's easy to say that the leaders, like Gatsa Buthelezi, and those are puppets of the government, but they were people that the government did not install in positions as chief of a tribe. They were people that were chosen by their tribe. Now, obviously, not all of you can say that you agree with what Ronald Reagan does. And it's fine, he was chosen by the majority of the people. And that's something that I think in a democratic society that we have to make peace with. If the majority of your people decide to vote somebody in as the leader of that specific, let's say, Gatsa Buthelezi, if he is going to be the leader of that tribe and was voted to be the leader by the majority of the people, obviously not everybody is going to agree with him. But there is no way for a person trying to achieve a peaceful settlement in South Africa to go and talk to every single South African and try and poll his votes. At some stage you have to go to a leader, and if the people choose the wrong leader, there is nothing that the government can do. It will be more wrong for the government to say that Gatsa Buthelezi is a fool, let's choose another guy.
Do the blacks have the vote in
they
South
have,
Africa?
No, they don't have a vote, but they have a vote for their own, well, like Gatsa Buthelezi or the leader of Botswana, were all voted by the black people to be their leader and to represent them.
Okay, so they could not vote for Reagan in our country, but they could vote for their own governor or something like that type of thing.
And these people that they vote for, basically, in trying to achieve the peaceful settlement, these were the people that the South African government turned to. These were the people that they asked for, you know, you are the spokesman for this specific tribe, and all the tribes do have a leader that they choose in different ways. But, you know, what do you see and what do you think your people want? And, you know, I think that obviously things are going to change, but this is when the whole idea of change in the country came about. This is when, you know, who they spoke to.
If the government has at times to talk to leaders, as you say, why didn't the government talk to the leaders about the new constitution you just mentioned? Because in the new constitution, the Indians are included and the coloreds are included, but the blacks are all excluded in that proposition with the President's Council.
How new is it? Just called.
The new constitution was instituted last year. It was voted in by a referendum last year. Mm. It's very new. It has not been, the new constitution has not been, you know, it's not implemented yet. It's that new that it was changed, you know, said, got the yes.
Yeah, the question is, why were black people not consulted about that constitution? If, in fact, the South African government is trying to work towards a solution?
Well, in the new constitution, the new constitution is based on the concept of a constellation of states, where most of the black people will be represented by their independent states, as Botswana, Venda, Transkei, and the Ciskei. The Indians and the coloreds and the other groups that were made provision for in the up to this date white government are just because they do not have an independent state, and the urban blacks will have the same kind of option.
Why aren't they given an independent state? Because your government,
there is no country, there is no part of the country that they call their own.
Your country, your government has the right, has the power to remove black people. Why don't you remove some black people and put Indians and give them a state in there? And another question is, do you really believe that the black students and all the South African students, black and white, today, are for the idea of homelands? The students, not the parents. The future is in our hands, you and me. Do you believe us black students are prepared to go to the homelands?
I do not think that I can speak for all students in South Africa. I can say that at the idea, when I heard about black states, there are things about independent homelands that I do not agree with, but because I cannot see a better solution in South Africa, I cannot see a peaceful solution in South Africa. And that is why I think that rather than trying to fight the system, let's see what this new constitution is all about, and let's see if it works. If it doesn't work, there is always time to change, but it's a new concept, and I do think that it's worth working at.
I believe it's just a waste of time.
Mike in the back, and then up here.
I
I'm hearing allusions to the question that started this last discussion, but I'm not hearing it answered. Where are your hopes? I see the government arming themselves to the teeth. I hear it being said that blacks in South Africa feel they have to turn terrorism to get their way. Do you have any hopes for a peaceful solution, or do you see it becoming an armed conflict? I just want to hear that answer. I think it's a real important question.
I just would like to say that I, as a Christian, think that we have to always hope that there can be a peaceful solution, because if we give up the hope, you know, that then there's no hope. So I think we have to strive for that, you know, and go on and try and reach a peaceful solution.
Are we saying, just for clarification here, that right now it is peaceful and we fear violence, or is there violence right now while we're waiting for a peaceful solution?
I think that's
mm-hmm. another level there. It may not be as bad as it could be, and you fear it could be.
I think there is violence in South Africa. There is, I think, violence any time when time of change is noted for the violence, and I think violence is noted on both sides, whether it is the Black Sash organization march, you know, having a march past and things like that, or whether it is you know, violence in the form of bomb scares and bomb attacks. I do think we're living in a time of, you know, to a certain extent, violence in South Africa. And I think what we want more than anything else is to keep it at that level until we can, you know, and I don't think people want any more, but there is a certain amount of violence in South Africa. And to your question of, is there any hope for South Africa? Well, South Africa has a very complex problem. I think the biggest single problem in South Africa is that we're a meeting ground of first and third worlds. As far as economical strength is concerned, we're a first world country, but as far as most of our problems are concerned, and that are things like housing and education, we're very definitely a third world country. And I, to be quite honest with you, very often I cannot even think, well, I have a hard time imagining a peaceful solution, but as Kathy said, we have to keep on hoping and we have to keep on trying to find that. And when we give up hope and say that there is no hope, it's going to explode, then I think is then that.
Let's try something a little bit new here. Can you ask or make your comment, and then ask and make your comment, and then whatever you want to respond to from what the two of them said, respond, because we have a little more than 5 minutes left. So let's try to double up here and see what happens.
The issue of majority rule was brought up before. My question is, how can you see hope in a new constitution in which, as Mavu asserted, that the blacks were not consulted at all? If the government really was interested in making positive changes and substantially including all groups and changes in South Africa, why weren't black groups consulted, and how can there be any hope in a new constitution in which it just perpetuates the present system?
Okay. Think about your answer while we get this one.
Do you, I hear you saying that you're looking for solutions, but do I hear you saying, without speaking it, that you want solutions that will still maintain your status quo economically as a white person? In other words, searching for the status quo to remain the same.
Okay, if you can address those two, and then Elmer over here has a question.
Okay.
First statement. Majority rule.
Okay. I think that something that has been misinterpreted is that the black people weren't consulted when the new constitution was made. I think that they were indeed consulted. I'm not somebody fulfilling a government position, but I'm sure that they were consulted, and that a lot of them have spoken out. There is a magazine in South Africa that they gave out, that they started giving out, and where they had the African leaders of the different tribes speaking, giving their views and their ideas on the Constitution. And I read that, and most of them said that when asked or when given the ideas, this is what I would say. So I do, you know, they were consulted, so that would be my answer, that I don't think that they were not consulted. Okay, and to your question, if I want to, you know, retain my status in South Africa, I think that as a Christian, I can really not say that I would rather live the way I'm living today and live
I'm
in
a... I'm not pointing it directly at you, I'm talking about the white population.
Okay, well, what I think is, I can't, when I speak very often, I cannot speak for the white population of South Africa. I will say that there are white people in South Africa who are scared that with the new constitution they will lose all the privileges that they've had. And there is no talking about that. But I think you will find those kinds of people all over the world who do not want change and who want to have to, you know, retain their privileges. But as far as I'm concerned, I want a peaceful solution for South Africa. And if that means that I will have to give up some of my privileges that I have right now, I'm willing to do that. I really am. I want more than anything else a peace. And I think that you will find that a lot of South Africans do feel that way. Not everybody, but...
I think there are some whites there who are not willing or who do not want to give up. I can remember very clearly one lady, well, a friend of mine, she was English. I spoke with her mother and she said how much their standard of living has gone down in the past couple of years. You know, they used to have like 10 servants and now they only have a couple. And how she was scared for the future of her kids. And she knew that her standard of living had to go down. I think the white standard of living must go down, you know, because it's like this and the gap has to be narrowed. They have to give up some. I don't see any other way. And I think there are both sides of the coin there, whites who feel both ways. Some are willing to give up. Others, you know, like the one that spoke to me, are not willing to give up. You know, like...
Elmer.
Last question.
The tough thing about talking with you is, for me, has been that it sounds like we're trying to solve your problems for you on the basis of our minimal information. And it also sounds like we're just supercritical. The good thing about it is that you're a marvelous mirror for us. Mm-hmm. Dan talked about an institutionalized sin. You see, I hope you don't follow in our ways. We are too sophisticated to do that. We do it cleverly. The Supreme Court this week, with no blacks on it, decided that blacks will not be given any preference in jobs when unions are involved. I don't hear many people in our congregations offering to give up their jobs on behalf of the blacks that were institutionally discriminated against, in my opinion, this week in the United States of America. And blacks and people in this country asking whether Jesse Jackson is running as an American or as a black. Issue of the campaign that is before us. Or religiously, you sitting in front of an all-white Holden Village group discussing an integration of the races. And so all we can do is confess our sin with you and plead to God to help you as we exchange. We are members, one of another, one Lord, many members. As you confess your sin, we confess ours to you. And if you have solutions for us, share them. If we have any for you, we'll try to share too.
I think on that note, thank you all.